welcome to the Learning Takes Flight podcast. I am your host, Megan Anderson. This week, I'm sharing with you some of my classroom and shelf setup tips and just some things that I've learned over the years that have helped me, and also maybe for some of my newer listeners or people who are just discovering Montessori for the first time, I'm also going to be sharing with you some of the foundations of the Montessori environment, either at home or in a more traditional brick-and-mortar school setting. So hopefully there's some information today that will help those of you out there who are maybe just getting into your school year, or it's a new month, maybe you're setting up brand new shelves, or maybe you're recognizing some changes in your child at home and you're saying, wow, I really want to try out Montessori for myself. Before we dive into all of that, though, I wanted to say hello if you're a brand new listener. This podcast is mostly about Montessori education, but sometimes I'll have guests or different episodes that kind of lead more into different topics and issues that have to do with child development and the family and things that children might need, different support aspects. So if this is your kind of thing, if you're a person out there who's looking for some advice, some support, please go back, take a listen to my past episodes. I just hit 1,000 downloads this past week, and I'm just so excited that there are people out there who are finding this as a space where they can maybe be inspired and maybe feel a little less alone. My personal background is that I have over 15 years of experience in Montessori education, as well as in general education, from early childhood all the way up to high school, and I've even had opportunities to guest lecture at the collegiate level. You can find me on Instagram. You can message me if you have a question or if you're interested in learning more about guest lecturing, or anything that, if there's a topic that you're saying, wow, I'd really like to learn more about this, maybe she'll talk about this on one of her episodes, or if you'd like to be a guest on the podcast, I'd love to welcome you. So that's just a little bit about me. And again, thank you to all of you who have been following the podcast. Make sure you do hit follow so that you don't miss an episode. I apologize that it's been a little bit sporadic lately. I'll get into this in a moment, but I kind of disappeared last week. And then life just went topsy-turvy as soon as I got back to my school, which again, if any of you are new listeners, I own and operate a small private school in the town in Idaho that I live in the United States. And yeah, I don't get away that much, if ever, during the very beginning of the school year. And I don't know, there's something about fall. There's something about the season of autumn that my life usually just decides to, maybe I have a new awakening every fall or learn something about myself. I don't really know what happens, but fall is just a time for change, it seems, in my life. So I apologize that I missed an episode here and there, but I'm hopefully back, and we'll get back on track with recording these episodes for you. So the Montessori environment is an integral part to the growth and the development and the support of the child. It's your base layer. It's the foundation of everything. And a lot of missteps or frustrations in your classroom, whether it's at home or in kind of more of that brick and mortar school setting, a lot of your frustrations, I talk about where you always need to look towards yourself first, right? And you can find that a lot of that in my episode about the spiritual transformation of the teacher that Dr. Montessori talks about. But it also comes back to your classroom setup, your environment, what the children are experiencing at that level. So in Dr. Montessori's book, The Secret of Childhood, she describes that the goal of the prepared environment is, this is her quote, that the first aim of the prepared environment is, as far as it is possible, to render the growing child independent of the adult. So everything I talk about today and everything that you read further or Google or look at on Instagram, you have to always come at it with that approach of, How independent is the child going to be in entering the environment, using the environment, connecting with the environment, and then using the material itself that you have placed within that environment, whether it's just one shelf in your living room, one cabinet in your kitchen, or an entire school building or an entire classroom that you're overseeing. So it really is the core component, that foundation of the Montessori philosophy is the prepared environment. It begins with that because that's where we're setting up the understanding of we are helping this child to develop independence, therefore to develop themselves as a person. So the environment is, what is it? It's everything that the child comes in contact with. So from the art on the walls to the stairs that they walk up to come into the environment, or the door that they walk through, or the space in your home that you're setting up, and the plants and the animals that they encounter. Maybe you have pets in your home or pets in your school, to the sink that they use, the bathroom that they're using, their access to food, literally every single thing that, I mean, really, again, this could be a multi-series podcast episode where we talk about all of the details and nuances that go into the prepared environment. So that's what we're going to talk about today. And again, you know, I guess I could have been talking about this a few months back, as all of us, at least in, you know, maybe here in North America, possibly parts of Europe, entering the new school year season at the end of summer and into fall. Many of you are probably already back in school. However, you know, it's the beginning of a new month, which means a big shelf switch. And it just really got me thinking about the importance of what is going on the shelves and how the environment itself plays a role in your classroom setup, your shelf switch, your curriculum updates that you're making. So I thought, well, what better time to chat about it than when it's on my mind? So that's where we're at today. But first, as always, my favorite moment of the week. So last week I disappeared, and it is not ever anything I have ever done in a September for really as long as I can remember. I didn't like missing school in high school. I didn't like missing school in college. And then when I went into the workforce after college, I mean, I couldn't afford to really go on vacation. So I don't know. I've just never really left in a September. It's just always kind of been that back to school time for me. So my husband is a professional photographer, and last year he took a photo trip to Yellowstone National Park to photograph the wildlife as part of his nature photography collection that he sells, luciditiphoto.com, if you're interested in his work. Of course, I'm biased. I think it's all pretty amazing. So he came home from that last year. I did not go. And he just was just going on and on about it. And I was having that feeling of like, I'm missing out. I'm missing out on not only this time with my partner, but I'm missing out on this time to experience this amazing place, which at that time I had never been to. And during a season when the trees are all changing color and the stars would be brilliant at night and the weather would be changing. I mean, there were just so many things to look forward to. But most of all, being able to see my husband at work and supporting him in his work, because he always supports me. So he had just kind of mentioned, you should come with me, you should come with me, you would think this was amazing. And so for the past year, I have had it in my head, I'm doing this. I don't know what's going to be happening with the pandemic. I don't know what status my school will be in, but I'm going. And so he booked it last spring. I did have the opportunity to go to Yellowstone in June, which I chatted about on here. Getting a chance to race the Yellowstone Half Marathon was amazing. But this trip was completely different because, yes, while I did a few touristy things, we weren't approaching it as a vacation. We were approaching it as a work trip. We woke up every day around 3 a.m. our time in order to very quickly get on the road. In Yellowstone, there's a lot of driving, actually, because there's basically one highway that loops around the park, and there's one of the main branches of that highway is currently closed, so it takes a little bit longer to get to certain parts of the park in order to see the wildlife that he was there to capture. So we'd have to get up really early. He made me coffee every day. And we would drive for about an hour or so in order to find a location, in order to wait for the animals and watch the sunrise and the amazing light changes and fog as the sun would rise every day. So again, I don't normally run away this time of year. And at first I really struggled with it. Honestly, the first few hours into the trip, definitely leading up to the trip, I just kept having this mantra in my head of, I don't want to go, I don't want to go. And then I had to realize, well, why am I telling myself I don't want to go? And the reason why I didn't want to go is because I did not want to leave my classroom, my students. I did not want to leave my school. I wouldn't really have consistent cell phone reception out where we were. And I also, when I'm with my husband and he's working, I try to be very conscientious of not just being on my phone the whole time. I mean, it definitely is a habit and I'm trying to break it, but so it would be good for me to not be worrying about work in the, you know, I guess that's what I'm getting at. And so as we got on the road and as we got into the trip, I began to just let go more and more and to relax. Now, there's a whole bunch of stuff that happened while I was gone, which is not really for this podcast. But I mean, it was fine. It's going to be fine. And my staff is absolutely amazing. And they handled so many things, you know, just really well. And being away taught me a lot about my failures as a leader. My lack of leadership, I guess. And I've learned basically the really hard way while I was gone that I need to do better. And so that's on me. And that's something that I'm going to take as a learning opportunity. But my favorite moment of the week is the moment when, before all of the kind of, you know, for lack of a better word, kind of shit hit the fan back at the school. My husband and I had gone on this hike, and it was towards the end of our trip, and we'd gone on this hike, and it was one of those hikes where it's like, oh, I think it'll only be a few miles. Well, it ended up being 6, which is fine. That's not terrible for us, but we're at, you know, over 7,000 feet elevation hiking up basically the side of, you know, this glacial moraine. And we hiked to 2 different mountain lakes. And the entire hike, I was happy and I felt free. And I just was reminded that this is what life is. Life is not being stuck in your classroom. Life is not obsessing over the child you probably can't save, again, for lack of a better word. Life is not sacrificing your health and your happiness in order to serve everyone else, and that it's okay to spend that time with your partner, spend that time with your family, to go and look at beautiful things and to just be away. And it's funny that that hike and those moments and that realization came, you know, really just a couple days prior to me getting cell service and finding out that it had been a rough couple of moments at the school that kind of was the catalyst for many other really difficult decisions that were going to come my way, that it was like a freight train, like there was no stopping it, you know, I had to face it. But again, that's a different story. But what was amazing is I, as upset as I was over my responsibilities back home, I don't know how I would have faced them if I hadn't had that time on that mountain, on that hike with my husband. So I don't regret it for one split second. And my students were fine. Everyone was safe. Everyone was happy. All of the children have carried on and are fine. And I am better for it. And my school is better for it. So I guess my message to you in my favorite moment of the week rambling this week is that when life presents you with that opportunity, I hope that you take it. And I hope that you can gain from it, you know, something as beautiful and wonderful as I have gained. I also, my last little bit of advice on that is within your relationships, that many of you listeners are maybe parents to young children or maybe even older children, and you might feel some guilt over leaving your child for a few days every once in a while. Or maybe you have never left your child in the care of someone else while you and your partner have gone on a small getaway together. Let me tell you right now, that is so vital. It is not only vital for your child to learn how to be in the care of someone else, it is also vital for you and your partner to have that time together and to build that space for one another where you can have conversations, you can be intimate, you can laugh, you can maybe even argue, you can make, basic decisions together of when to wake up, when to go get coffee, where to eat dinner that night, which hike to go on. And it is in those moments where you are continuing to deepen your relationship. And let me tell you, the children grow up fast. And if this is the person you're supposed to spend the rest of your life with, you have to spend your life building that relationship. And there will be seasons to your relationship that you, it's just like what I'm going to talk about today with the child and the environment. You have to build that foundation or your structure will not stand. And I'm really grateful that my husband and I have spent the last 15 years building that foundation, because if we had solely focused on our children, whom we love very much, don't get me wrong, we've literally done everything for them, but we would not be as good of parents if we had not spent our time together also making sure that our relationship and our time together was valued just as much. So again, a totally different podcast subject, but there you go. That's my two cents and your relationship advice for this week. So this week, to completely go down a different route, setting up the classroom and the maintaining of the shelves. I really truly feel that this episode can be applied to, like I said earlier, a few minutes ago, the homeschool classroom environment, or maybe it's just not even a full-on homeschool yet. Maybe it's just you with your toddler and you're kind of embarking on this Montessori journey with your child. And it can, and obviously I'm speaking from the perspective of kind of that more brick and mortar. I have a school, I have a classroom environment. That's where I'm at right now, but I've set up my homeschool space for my child many years ago. I've had friends that have a lot of experience in that. Again, I usually give a little shout out to Callie Ann at Little Farm Montessori. She has amazing content on being at home with a toddler and how she uses her home space for their learning, as well as she has background experience in setting up her own school. So, I've had a few different classroom spaces over my years. I have mostly worked in historic buildings, which is kind of funny. It's just a testament maybe to my personality and where I've landed in my life. But I've also been in other converted spaces. Well, actually, all of them have been converted spaces, I guess I should say. But I've worked and did practicum in converted houses that became Montessori schools. I had a practicum, a few months of a practicum in a former .com office space, which was really interesting. It had been this open concept office building with really low walls that they had made into a Montessori school. And so again, it had, you know, all of these spaces have their pros and cons. I practicum in a school that was built as a Montessori school. It had never been anything else. And it had kind of every couple classrooms was its own little mini one level house. And then they were all kind of connected by the outdoor space. That was really neat. My first school building that I opened was in a former gas station. I mean, you wouldn't really know it unless now if you were in this town and you drove by it and you looked at it, you'd be like, oh, I could see how that was a gas station. But it was a gas station that had been built, I think, in like the 1940s. And actually what was really cool is the space that I converted into a kitchen the bathrooms were original, I guess is what I'm getting at, from I think they had been redone maybe in the 60s, but I had converted one of them into a kitchen. But it still had all that original tile, and it was kind of funky. And then I had a classroom in a historic high school that had been built in the 1920s, I believe, actually, in the 1920s. And that was really neat. That building, I mean, again, it had its cons because it was this huge old high school. And so a lot of the spaces were, it's a public building. And the Montessori School of Pullman leased, they still do. They're still there. Amazing school. They leased different old classrooms down different hallways that were all the Montessori school. So on one hand, it was kind of a bummer because we weren't necessarily connected and the children and the teachers had to go out into a public hallway in order to reach one another. And it was safe. I mean, it's a beautifully well cared for building and they're really conscientious of who they lease to. But at the same time, you had to be aware of you're entering a public space. And we shared our parking lot and the gymnasium and the playground even. And that what was also kind of interesting to me while I worked there was the classrooms to me were huge, really, really big. And I was considered to have the smaller. At that time, there was only two primary classrooms. That was it. And I was considered to have the smaller classroom, and mine didn't have the kitchen in it. I mean, we had a sink space for the students, but we didn't have the other classroom had like this, you know, it was huge and it had all this storage and it had its own bathroom within it in the classroom. And then it had a fridge and a stove with an oven and a big sink space. Like, it had a full on kitchen in it. And it was funny because we used to all talk all the time about the different pros and cons, like the little children's bathroom that was in there. It didn't have a ceiling on it. So you could hear everything that was going on in there. So, you know, sometimes you'd be in the middle of circle or whatever. And yes, it was nice that the children could just go right there to use the bathroom. But at the same time, then, you know, sometimes you got to listen to their private moment. And the same thing with the kitchen. You had to keep the children away from the stove. But there was lots of opportunities for cooking and practical life directly within that classroom. So another thing, too, to consider with pros and cons of your various spaces. I mean, sometimes bigger is not always better. Sometimes people think, oh, I wish I had this classroom with this huge space. And I've found that the bigger the classroom, the more space you have to fill. The bigger the classroom, the more tempting it is to just fill the shelves with as many lessons. And then you're having to create more lessons. And then you're having to give more lessons. Or maybe there's more materials that are getting dusty and never being used. So, you know, there's definitely pros and cons both ways. And then it's the same thing if you're setting up your home environment. It might be nice to think like, oh, I'm going to dedicate this entire former bedroom or office space into my child's homeschool classroom. But maybe your child, so my son, he still likes to be wherever we are, which is awesome. We love hanging out with him. And so that never would have worked for him. To go into a completely separate room and be expected to do a work independently. He just would not have done that. Our Montessori homeschooling, this is another episode too, but it just did not work. I found that it was better that he and I were doing more practical life, real life activities together in order to get him to remain active. So gardening, cooking, baking, building things, art, was better for him, that were just a part of our home life and our routine. That was better than having some kind of designated homeschool space with shelves, with materials that he would magically go and choose from. That just did not work for us. So, you know, as we kind of go into this today, you're really going to have to consider, what kind of space do I have? What am I working with? And I also really encourage you to not do that whole, like, grass is always greener sort of a thing. I mean, not to tell you how to live your life, but I am going to tell you how to live your life a little bit. Be grateful for what you have. You know, if you don't have the bigger classroom or this big fancy space, I mean, in my school, my current building, the historic Carnegie Library that I'm in, I'm in the basement. And when I first moved into the basement, I had given up. So the upstairs classrooms have these huge, I'm guessing 8-foot windows. They're massive, maybe 6-foot. They're huge. They're huge windows. And depending on which part of the building you're in, you can see the river, you can see the mountains, you can see the park. They're all surrounded by trees. Their students can sit and watch birds. They can have bird feeders on their windows that birds will actually come to. I mean, they see all kinds of things out their windows. They can grow things on their window ledges because they have lots of sunlight. And I knew that my students, it made more sense for them to be in the basement. I teach the oldest students. There's a boys' and a girls' bathroom downstairs. There's a kitchen space for them. There was more room. I mean, the elementary kids are big, so they needed that basement space. But a little part of me was kind of grumpy to give up those beautiful windows. I had spent a couple years upstairs, and I mean, I was going to miss, you know, watching the osprey in the tree eating the fish with my students and the bald eagle flying by, or getting to watch the sunlight across the hills during the day. And giving that up for the basement ground level windows was hard at first. But now we get to watch squirrels run by, and we get to watch, you know, we have a different perspective of the sky and the sunlight and from our windows. And we definitely love having the space that we have and the room that we have. And so I've grown to love it. What has happened to me unexpectedly with COVID is the other lower elementary. So I teach upper. I had a different lower elementary teacher. She left during the pandemic? Yeah, she taught during the school closure. And then after that, she didn't come back for the 2020-2021 school year. And it was all of a sudden. I didn't really have time to replace her. So I took that class and just blended them with my own. And it still wasn't a very big class anyway. And then I didn't have a need for another teacher down in the basement. And the teacher, my other teacher who has her classroom upstairs, who was teaching kindergarten, first grade, and now this year she teaches lower elementary, she's really happy in her classroom. And it works out that her kids are upstairs, mine are down, and we've made it work. And so, pro and con, for better or for worse, I inherited basically an entire extra classroom. And they're connected through this really cool old original archway doorway that's just open. There's no door on it. And so our classrooms, when Gina was there, our classrooms were always connected anyway. So last year, I just kind of didn't really know what to do with that space. And then this year, you can go back on my Instagram and kind of take a look. I think I've posted what it looks like now. But I just feel like I finally moved in. So I guess my whole point of this is that sometimes it takes you an entire year of living in a space to know what you want to do with it. And that's okay too. I guess if you take away anything from all of this today is just know that you have time. And if you have to change your mind, if you have to switch things up, it's okay. The big thing to remember, though, is that this is the children's space. And so if you are going to make a big change, be prepared for it to throw them off. Be prepared to have some time for them to adjust. Maybe give them a heads up. Maybe tell them on a Friday, you know, I'm going to work on our classroom this weekend, and on Monday morning, it might look a little different. Things might have changed. And then on Monday, you can, you know, almost like an I spy lesson of what has changed? What can you see that's different? Because especially for the very young child, you're going to throw off their sense of order. So I don't typically recommend changing your whole entire classroom layout over the course of a weekend, especially for the young children. Even for the older children. So I guess that's kind of why last year I just sort of left it how it was and spent the whole school year deciding what I did and did not like about it. So I guess today, so thinking about your space, as you go into kind of my tips and tricks and ideas, really be thinking about, you know, your specific space and how some of this may or may not apply. I will say that I am constantly looking at, because I've been in so many different Montessori schools and classrooms and homeschools and my own spaces over the years, I cannot look at real estate, whether it's commercial or private, without thinking, ooh, that would be a great Montessori school. And it's, you know, it's just sort of a fun little game I like to play, which is also why, you know, one of the pros of social media, it is really fun to go on there with an open mind, without judging yourself, but to really look at what other people have done with their home spaces or classroom spaces. So I'm going to just share a little bit of with, you know, in terms of your classroom space, your how, your why, and your what. So that, you know, when you are beginning to set up your space, you're keeping in mind the six main principles of the Montessori environment, which are freedom, so supporting that independence, order, beauty, nature, and using, you know, real items, connecting the child to nature, connecting them to real items, being really aware of what kinds of, you know, materials you're putting in there. Are they all plastic? Do you have different textures and, you know, items that are made out of different real things in there? Does the child have a space for socializing? And how, what does that look like? And that's at all levels. And then with all of those in place, then the sixth one is reaching that intellectual support of the child. Like, how are you supporting their intellectual development and meeting those needs? And a lot of frustrated parents and teachers, they have ignored or maybe misunderstood some aspect of the child's environment, the classroom environment. And then, unfortunately, then the child gets blamed. And one example I always go back to, and I've probably said it in a past episode, but loud classrooms. So if you yourself are shouting across a classroom, and as well as, so you're not only are you modeling being loud, but you've also have not provided a quiet space within the classroom, or you have not provided rugs to dampen the sound. And then you get frustrated with how loud your class is. Well, then you're not understanding that you're the root of the problem. You are what is connecting your child to the environment. You have designed, developed, set up this environment, and then you are modeling for them how to be in that environment. And so you can offer all the grace and courtesy lessons on being quiet all day long, but they will not go anywhere. It will not manifest any kind of result that you are hoping for unless you have those other key components in place. So how you yourself are interacting with that environment, and then what is physically within that environment to set the child up for success. Then the idea of lessons such as the silent game or grace and courtesy of how we speak to one another within that classroom environment. I'm a loud person by nature. I just am. And it has been hard for me to learn how to whisper or to send a note or to physically walk across a classroom to have said what I need to say to a child instead of just shouting across. And, you know, every teacher is different and every person has a different level of things that they can live with. I realized I could not live with a loud classroom, and so therefore I needed to change myself and how my classroom was set up in order to support a more quiet classroom. So, okay, so let's begin with the how. How will the space be used? That's your first question. Ages of the children, and this is something that is so, so vital. Let me tell you, a 7-year-old and their decision-making skills and independence and height even, physical needs, is very different than a 10-year-old. What you can expect of a 10-year-old is different than a 7-year-old. Also keeping in mind that not every 10-year-old looks the same or has the same developmental support needs. And then when you get into the very young child, oh my goodness, 18 months is a lifetime away from 3 years old. Completely different set of gross motor, physical, just their needs are, it's almost a different planet. And so it's really tricky if you have, so like in my toddler community, I have a very small group of 3-year-olds and a kind of bigger group of that 18-month-old, 2-year-old, you know, group, that 12 to 24-month-old group. And it is hard. It's hard to help the 3-year-olds to understand that they cannot play or work with the same materials in the same way as their younger friends. But we have a very open concept space. So it's really me trying to get the teachers to understand the difference in the developmental needs. So how will the space be used? So again, toddler, very different needs from their 3-year-old friends, and the 4- and 5-year-old friends have different needs than the 3-year-old and on up through the ages. And always keeping in mind that the cornerstones of independence and removing obstacles, providing challenges and interesting works at whatever level you're at. So the other day, so we have this, I just purchased a few weeks ago, this floor, you know, this mirror for the very young children that, you know, it's safety glass and all that. And it's on a little stand. It's made for crawlers and, you know, the 12 to 16 month old child. Well, it was placed in a part of the classroom where it was kind of in the path of these 18 month olds who are really developing that gross motor. They are climbing, they're walking, they're running, and they're still kind of at that waddling phase where they're getting stronger, but it's not, they would rather climb over something or go right through something than go around. They're just not at the go around stage yet. And part of that is because they want to climb. And I was watching this 18 month old try and climb over this mirror while the younger 12 month old was trying to actually use the mirror. And I was observing them and I was recognizing that the 18 month old was getting more and more and more frustrated that he just wanted to go through it and he couldn't. And then he wanted to go over it, but it wasn't made for climbing. And so then he was thwarted. He was told no, he was removed, you can't climb over this. And I thought, as I was watching, I was like, well, all of his anger is because we are not understanding what he needs from this environment and that this mirror is not conducive to where he's at developmentally. And it was just even though it was a two-sided mirror, it doesn't need to be out in the pathway in the middle of the room for the children. It needs to be against a wall, out of the way, where the very youngest friends can lay in front of it or crawl in front of it and look at themselves in the mirror. But the 18-month-old, it wasn't their height, it's not for them, and they are moving too fast and too curious in their gross motor movement to stop and stare at themselves in the mirror like they would have months ago. So that's our error. That's not the child trying to, oh, he's angry, oh, he's naughty, oh, he's this. No, it's purely, I mean, yes, did he get upset? Did he get frustrated? Yes. But that's where you have to recognize your role in the child's experience within their environment. And oops, I should not have put that there in that way. And so now I have to make a change in order to better support this child and their needs. So how will the space be used? Who is using it? So they need, for example, all of the children, no matter what age, they need opportunities for gross motor, even elementary students. The myth that a child should be sitting at a desk from age 5 all the way to age, 25, sitting in one desk, listening, filling out a worksheet is absolutely ridiculous. And elementary children, just as much as that 18-month-old that I just described, they need to move. They need to walk across the room to sharpen a pencil. They need to be able to get up and get a drink. They need to be able to walk over to their friend and say, oh, that's cool. What are you working on? Oh, I want to do that next. And then be able to go back to their work without getting in trouble. So you need clear paths for movement. You might have to reduce the amount of stuff. I reduced the amount of furniture in both of my classrooms this year, and already a month into the school year, it's like another planet. I am so, so happy with how they can stretch out on the floor. They can walk through the space without running into stuff. There were certain pieces of furniture that every single one of them was constantly running into last year, and it was driving me crazy. So eliminating those obstacles for them has reduced my annoyance with their gross motor development. And, and it's also been an acknowledgement of their needs and their physical development within my classroom space. What kinds of things so everything at the child's level. So from, within safety reasons, obviously, for the very young child, but what kinds of things does the child need at their level? They need artwork to look at their level that's safe. They need opportunities for self-care at their level. So, toiletry items, a mirror to look in, a place to wash their hands, I'm currently on a quest to learn a safe way for the toddler to use a garbage can. I mean, a toddler and just an open garbage can is a recipe for disaster. You know, they're taking food out. They're dumping everything out. They're really into transferring. They want to carry the garbage around on their head. If you have any ideas, definitely send them my way. It's something that I'm like, huh, garbage can. So the little step can with the lid, that's great, but then that becomes its own whole other activity. So I don't really know that that's the solution either currently. I also was caught in a conundrum the other day with my youngest friends where I was realizing that there was no opportunity for assisting them in independently cleaning their faces after they've eaten their lunch. And then I thought, well, this has turned into just an adult convenience kind of a thing where we're just grabbing a baby wipe and wiping their face off for them. And that is not ideal either. So where's the space where they can go, look in a mirror, have a cloth or something gentle to wipe their face off on their own? So really thinking through all of the nuances of the child's needs within that environment. And how much will the adult have to aid in this? My elementary students, I have really made sure that every single thing is there for them. For example, my students know where we keep the extra paper towels for our hand washing. They can go get them. They know where the extra toilet paper is. So if we've run out of toilet paper or if they know they used the last one, they can go get it. They have a scrubby right there by the sink. They can scrub off their own dishes and put them in the dishwasher. They have their snack supplies are ready to go so they can set up and set out their own snacks every day. I am doing as little as possible for them, not because I'm lazy or I'm mean, but because, again, everything is rooted in independence. The why, let's see, the how, the why. Okay, so why? Why is an item there? This is kind of leading into just piggybacking off of what I just talked about. Why is an item there? Is it there? So this could be a furniture, a piece of art, a type of tray, a basket, a book. I mean, literally thinking about every single item you're placing in your environment. Why is it there? Is it there because you like it? Is it there because you believe it is beautiful? And then you have to go back to, so what is the purpose of it? Are you going to be upset when the children use it and they're not supposed to? Are you going to be upset when it is broken? Are you going to be upset when it gets dirty? So I test every single thing out. And I've said this in past episodes where I get a second person to help me move the furniture in my environment. I have to. I like a second set of eyes. Sometimes I go and ask multiple people and I walk around through the space as though I'm the child. If I'm working on a toddler or a primary classroom, I will get down on my knees and I will look around the classroom from as low of a perspective as I can get. And I test out the weight of things. I test out the durability of things. Because you have to really think about what is their view. And what is in the space? So we do have areas in the Montessori classroom that are meant for just the teacher. Sure, of course. You know, you can have a teacher station, a teacher shelf, but really everything that is there should serve a purpose for the child and aiding them in their independence. So that is the why. So asking yourself, really looking around, why is the item there? And that leads us to the what. What is in the space? So the materials themselves, obviously. And we're pretty lucky in that Montessori classrooms, even all the way up through elementary, we have areas to each, you know, so we have a math area, language, you know, geography, science, practical life. We have specific areas of the classroom, so that helps us right there to map out our space. I love to actually draw a little map of my space and how, what furniture I own, where things might go. So this helps us, you know, knowing the areas of the classroom will help us to organize and just kind of grapple with the vast curriculum of Montessori. But here's the thing of what you're putting in your space. So after you've answered the question of why, or maybe this is happening simultaneously, you have to really think about what you're putting in there, because you have to either be prepared to give a lesson on that or you're going to be prepared to tell the child no. And if we're telling a child no all the time, it's just like that 18-month-old that I was explaining, trying to climb over that mirror. He was told no, told no, told no. Well, all that is doing is thwarting his independence. And what is the purpose of our environment and of our Montessori work? It is to support independence. And so if we're already stopping ourselves and the child before we've even started, then we have a problem. And you will have a frustrated child. You will have somebody who does not trust your words. And you will be a frustrated adult. You will be the adult of, oh, why do they keep picking that up? No, we're not to that yet. No, we're not. You haven't had that lesson yet. I mean, does any of this sound familiar? No, we can't choose that today. Well, why? Why not? Well, because it's Monday. Okay. So, I mean, you need to figure out with you and your life what works, but some teachers cover things up so that they're not having to say no. It's just a signal to the children, when this is covered, we're not choosing that right now. For me, I personally just prefer to not put things out. And I have older students that I'm the majority of the time with, but with my very young students, I just wouldn't even offer it. I just wouldn't even have it out. And if that makes your classroom space or your homeschool space look empty or very zen, as I've been told in the past, then fine. There is beauty to minimalism. We get so caught up in this, I have to have everything and it has to be crammed full and I have to have every single option possible. What if they get bored? I feel like in America, we're so afraid of our children getting bored all the time. And this is just absolutely ridiculous. You know, only boring people are bored. I don't know. I spent a lot of my childhood just literally being physically, this sounds really mean, but kicked out of our house. We were not allowed to be bored. My mom was constantly like, go outside, go dig a hole, go build something. Go, you know, and we were never, ever bored. We were constantly busy. And so I don't know if this is a newer thing with, you know, technology becoming more of a part of a child's life, but they will not be bored. Do not be so afraid of your children, your students becoming bored. Be more worried about them connecting to their environment. And maybe for a younger child, that means you have to switch things out a little bit more often. Maybe spice it up, maybe, and switch out your pitchers for pouring a little more often, but they will not be bored. So less is more. And so I guess, you know, I actually have this, like, imagine I'm saying this to you in all caps, but so you don't have to have every single lesson possible out all of the time, especially if you are teaching at home. And I also, again, I'm saying this to you in all caps without shouting. I do not believe that you have to own every single piece of equipment to be legitimate or offer Montessori, especially at home, especially at home. And you know what? My school, we're in our 11th year. And when I first started, I was very broke, for lack of a better word. I mean, we had, you know, we had money to start the school, but I still don't have an unlimited income. Who am I kidding? But I definitely could not afford a lot of the basics. I mean, I was gifted some of them. I thrifted some of them from a Montessori school that had closed, and I made a lot of my own materials. But still, to this day, my school does not own every single piece of material because I have definitely chilled out on thinking that my students need every single thing. Because they don't. And we still make a lot of our own things. We do a lot of extensions with the materials that we do have. We share materials across classrooms and we save up for some things. We set goals. We look for sales. And guess what? Even without every single piece of curriculum, every single material possible, all of our students meet their academic and developmental goals within our classrooms. They do. So my last little bit of advice today is just a quick moment about shelf switching. So when do you switch your shelves? This is really personal. This is between yourself, your school maybe that you are in with your administrator or your home. It's really just up to you. But who is at the root of everything is the child. So observing your child, observing your students. When I taught primary, I would observe what was not you know, really being used or touched. And I would either give a little refresher lesson or I would take the material out myself and just use it. And the children were all of a sudden very interested in it again. I would observe what was really popular, what they loved, and I tended to switch out materials pretty much each month, but sometimes an item needed to stay out longer. Obviously, your core curriculum stays out all the time. My pink tower never went away, or broad stair, or number rods, all of those kinds of things. Practical life always had a variety of transferring, and you know, care of the environment never goes away. So I might add to it, advance it as the children advanced. I mean, obviously you don't start off the beginning of the school year with the same materials that you end up with in May. That goes for any of the subject areas. But yeah, I just really tended to base it on seasonally what was happening in the classroom, as well as the children's interest and needs. And I learned all of this through observation. Now that's kind of a, you know, one of those things where if the children then begin to expect that things will change each month, then they kind of get into that rhythm within their own lives, and then they look forward to that. In elementary, every month, I just switch it, which is hard because there's some things, especially. So I guess I should add, in math and language, they're always just built upon, and a lot of the foundational items stay out all year. But in science, social studies, geography, those are switched every month, and the subjects continue to build. So in social studies, we build on the timeline. In geography, we focus on a different continent. In science, we build based off of the Montessori five great lessons, beginning with, you know, the universe, and then building on learning about basically, you know, the world and how the world works. So right now we've switched to, we just finished space, and we've moved on to learning about the earth and volcanoes and rocks and minerals and the crust and how everything works, which is a subject I love. I love geology so much. So yeah, I just, even if my elementary students, you know, they could probably continue to study space all year. So they always, I guess I should add, they always have access to research materials in any of the subjects that we have or we will study. So they always have access to books about space, opportunities to look things up using their computer skills. So that doesn't go away. So they're continually building that foundation. But I have found that they need that refresher every month. They need it to switch up. I also really want to add for elementary, and I kind of talked about this, I think, a little bit last episode, about this idea that children, if you repeat a lesson or reread them the same book, that they'll be like, oh, I already know that. That's actually an opportunity. That's kind of an indicator to you that they need to hear it again, so that they kind of adjust their attitude that we're always learning. There's always something new to hear. There's always some new aspect of that same book or that same material that they can use in a new way, or put a different type of effort into it. So just kind of wanted to add that. In the Neato and the toddler group, I change things a little more frequently than either primary or elementary. Obviously some things stay all the time, but I feel like because the toddler is changing at a much more rapid pace than some of the older children, especially like the elementary children, they have a different level of wear and tear, different disinfecting needs, and they just kind of need their interests continuously broadened. So even though it might be the same kind of material, you know, either a stacking toy or a chunky puzzle or a ball with texture that they're reaching for, by diversifying that, you continue to challenge or develop a different skill, or continue to build that spatial awareness and just continue to have their interest. So again, you don't need to put out every single lesson. I feel like October and December are really good examples of this, especially October, because it's a long month with Halloween at the very end. And, you know, here in North America, specifically the United States, Halloween is a huge, huge holiday. I mean, I feel like the kids talk about Halloween year round more than they do something like Christmas. There are so many opportunities in October for cultural and scientific lessons with fall and harvest and Dia de los Muertos. And but honestly, chill, truly just chill out. It's just rest easy knowing that if you don't do a craft or a lesson or a project or read that book this year, you can next year. You don't have to offer them every single thing all the time in all of the ways. I actually prefer to hold back certain crafts or science experiments or lessons each year as I'm setting up my materials. There's always things that I'm like, nope, I'm not putting this out this year. Or, oh, I'm going to switch it to this year. Or I'm going to add this element to it this year. And you know what? Guess what? By holding back some materials each year, you are more prepared for next year. So you don't have to study, like, you know, we're studying ancient indigenous tribes in North America this year, as I always do with the beginning of our social studies. Some years I always focus on our local tribes, and then some years I focus on different tribes from different parts of the countries. And we kind of do an overview of many of the tribes, but certain years we'll just focus on a few tribes at a time. And that way the children are getting they're building on that more broad information, because it is a lot of information. So, you know, if this is something that you continue to be interested in and kind of, you know, how, like what our shelves end up looking like. And again, each of the teachers in my school are different. We all have our own kind of way of doing things. I don't make them follow me on how I do things, but a lot of them do listen to my advice, which is great. And, you know, I mean, I do know sometimes what I'm talking about. I promise you that some of these things, if you actually try them, will probably work out in your favor. But more importantly, the child's favor, right? But yeah, visit, you know, my Instagram for more ideas on shelves and specific lessons. And I have found, I will tell you, I'm not going to list a whole bunch of specific people. If you're really curious where I get a lot of my things, you can message me. But I mean, I'm sure a lot of you already maybe follow some of the same people I do on social media. But I have found that Etsy is an amazing resource for small creators who are making just absolutely beautiful things. I've also made a lot of my own things. I found that, you know, when you have that kind of homemade quality to what the children are using, it makes the materials a lot more precious to them. And then they can feel like their creation, which is also going to be, you know, self-made, is special too. All right. Well, I hope that this week was helpful. I hope that if you have any questions, you can certainly send me a message, learningtakesflightmontessori@gmail.com. You can find me on Instagram. Make sure to follow me on wherever you're listening to your podcast. If you hit follow, you won't miss an episode. I'm going to really set that goal to continue to be consistent. Hopefully my life will chill out just a little bit, not be quite so topsy-turvy. I hope that all of you have a beautiful week wherever you are in the world, and that you know that you're never alone in this work, and that I'm here, and that I'm really hoping that we can build this community together. My little quote for the day, week, wherever you're at listening to this, is from Dr. Montessori and The Secret of Childhood. When a child is given a little leeway, they will at once shout, "I want to do it." But in our schools, which have an environment adapted to children's needs, they say, "Help me to do it alone." Have a wonderful week.